Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2020-1126, the State of Ohio versus Eddie Burns. For the appellant, we have Mr. Hackett.
Chief Justice O'Connor, counsel, may it please the court. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, Ohio does not have direct file. Instead, the legislature prescribed the only process by which charges against children can be filed in adult court in the first place. Using plain rules of construction, what we're asking this court to hold here is this. The plain text of Ohio's current transfer statute demands probable cause for each act charged. The case, then, that is transferred under that statute consists only of those charges meeting the probable cause requirement. Otherwise, this statutory creation loses much of its force. Where a juvenile judge finds that a charge has not been supported by probable cause, the answer, Your Honors, is either a state's appeal from that finding or refiling later in juvenile court with sufficient evidence. What the legislature did not intend, Your Honor.
Excuse me, why does it have to be refiled later in juvenile court? Why cannot it be dealt with adult court?
Well, Your Honor, the code also provides that all charges involving children must begin in juvenile court. And as I said at the opening, the legislature prescribed the only process by which charges filed in juvenile court can then find their way to adult court to be charged. And so that is just one option. I think an alternative is for the state to file a notice of appeal from the finding of no probable cause as well. But if they do not, the state, as the master of their own case, can always dismiss these charges voluntarily, amass new evidence, and rebring these charges in juvenile court. Adding to that, Your Honor, the legislature, in reading this statute, I don't think intended to permit the state to bypass those processes and allow the state to indict anew directly in adult court. I think that view comes almost verbatim from this court's decision in State versus Adams, which the legislature overturned. And so we're asking this court today to reject that view squarely, to make clear that Adams was in fact overturned by statutory amendment, and to hold that a juvenile court's no probable cause finding, as this court stated in AJS and MP, terminates the state's ability.
What other cases do we have to overrule to get to your result? Sorry, what other cases do we have to overrule to get to your result?
None, Your Honor, and I don't think—
I mean, we have to overrule DB, wouldn't we?
No, Your Honor. So DB, I don't think has an effect here. It's distinguishable in that DB was decided under Ohio's reverse waiver statute. So it was a different statute, different statutory language, and it dealt with mandatory transfer offenses, which are not at play here. In addition, there was probable cause.
But that case said that there's probable cause for a single charge. You transfer the whole case. I mean, that's almost a direct quote from the case.
In that case, Your Honor, dealt with mandatory transfer offenses, and so the transfer happened pursuant to 2152.12f, which prescribes the process by which hybrid cases are to be transferred to adult court. And that's really under F where the inquiry about whether charges stem from a common nucleus of operative fact comes from. Those are really F cases.
But you still have the rule established in DB that if there's grounds to transfer a single charge, you transfer the entire case, all the charges that go with it.
Under Revised Code Section 2152.12f.
The language is indistinguishable.
It's not, Your Honor. 2152.12f deals with—
So case means something different in the two different sections? Is that your position?
Well, no, Your Honor. So case, I think, when outside of the F context, must be given its plain and ordinary meaning. It is not defined by statute.
Well, if it has its plain and ordinary meaning, it can't have different meanings in two different sections.
Well, Your Honor, this court's decision in DB did not so much turn on specifically definition of the case. Rather, it was decided under the reverse waiver statute, and this court held that
if there is probable cause to support a single charge, the case is subject to transfer. That's what DB said.
Under revised code 2152.12f, which prescribes the process by which hybrid cases are to be transferred out of juvenile court. Your Honors, again, this DB was decided under the reverse waiver statute, and this holding was that the reverse waiver statute does not permit an adult court to sever a case in two. F specifically provides the exact opposite. F does permit a juvenile court to sever a case in two. And so F is pertinent, and the fact that DB and its progeny were decided under F and arose under F is important. Regarding definition of the term case, again, giving it its plain and ordinary meaning, Your Honors, case must mean the set of charges that are eligible for transfer. I think adopting the government's view that case is defined by a set of facts more broadly would require this court to adopt a specialized definition of case that in effect swallows the probable cause requirement entirely. It creates needless tension with the probable cause requirement. And adding to that, Your Honors, most of these pertinent statutes do refer back to 2152.12a and b, which of course sets forth the probable cause requirement. So not only must case be given its ordinary definition, but we would ask the court that these statutes be read holistically, together in harmony. Finally, Your Honors, I guess on the statutory interpretation front of this, I think the rule of lenity comes into play as well. If there is any outstanding ambiguity regarding definition of case or regarding the construal of a certain provision, that language should be construed in favor of the accused. So, Your Honors, if there are no further questions at this point, I think I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Does our case that's currently pending, State v. Smith, affect this case?
I think it would depend on the scope of this court's decision in Nicholas Smith, of course, Your Honor. But there are some distinguishable facts, the most pertinent being, I think, that Nick Smith involved a singular incident. So all of these charges were from a common nucleus of operative fact, whereas this case dealt with seven separate incidents over 7 months. So distinguishable on the facts, and it's difficult for me to say without, you know, seeing the court's decision in Smith, how it might affect the outcome.
Could directly affect this case.
I think it could, theoretically.
Thank
Your Honor.
You.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if a case is, if a juvenile court finds probable cause and a case is transferred to the common pleas court, does the grand jury still find probable cause for all those?
Yes, Your Honor. The charges need to be refiled.
So if the juvenile court finds probable cause on a charge, grand jury could not find probable cause, and the prosecutor wouldn't be able to proceed with that, right?
That's true, Your Honor, as provided that the charges are in front of the grand jury properly in the first place.
So the rule you're asking for only goes one way, then a no probable cause finding is binding, but on a subsequent proceeding, but not a probable cause finding.
No, Your Honor, and the reason is that this...
How's that no?
Because this involves a transfer of jurisdiction. So the question is whether the charges have gotten to the grand jury properly in the first place. So once the charges are...
Well, you seem to be assigning some kind of dispositive weight to a no probable cause finding by a juvenile court judge, but... You don't seem to assign that weight to it when a charge has been transferred. Doesn't that suggest that your argument is inconsistent with the statutory scheme?
No, Your Honor. Again, the reason is because the transfer statute sets forth the process. And so once the charges are properly before the grand jury in the first place, after a finding of probable cause, those charges are in front of the grand jury. The grand jury can return the indictment. The reason the opposite is not true is because the charges don't get to the grand jury properly in accordance with statute after a finding of no probable cause. Instead, Your Honors, as a legal matter, this court has said in both the mandatory and discretionary context that findings of no probable cause are the functional equivalent of a dismissal. They necessitate dismissal, and that is AJS and MP, the latter of which was a discretionary case where this court specifically explained that the legal effect of a no probable cause finding, unlike amenability, is fundamentally different. No probable cause, unlike amenability, amounts to a functional equivalent of a dismissal.
A dismissal with prejudice or without prejudice?
Without prejudice, Your Honor.
So let me ask you this. So I'm just trying to understand the flow of how you see a bindover happening. You have a juvenile standing in front of the court. They're charged with five charges. The first step to whether or not a child on a non-mandatory case is bound over is there probable cause? If there's no probable cause in any of the five charges, then the juvenile court judge turns the case away. If there is a finding of probable cause on any of those five charges, it only takes us to the next step. Is this child amenable to the juvenile court system for rehabilitation and treatment? If the child is not, then the case is transferred. But in doing that, it's also finding the jurisdiction, because the General Assembly has decided if the child's not amenable any longer to the juvenile court system, then there is a transfer to the adult system where they will stand trial. You're saying that there is a severance that happens. Any one of those five charges, a lack of finding of probable cause, severs that, and then this court, the Court of Common Pleas General Division, can never consider that.
Unless it is refiled in juvenile court and properly bound over. That is correct, Your Honor. I think that result flows from this court's decision.
So how do you explain then, as that case goes to the adult court system, the first step is for it to go to a grand jury, an independent statutory creation, where it says in the charge of the grand jury that the grand jury shall consider all crimes that were committed within the county anew. They have total control over looking at everything that law enforcement is bringing to them, testifying about, to consider the case anew, and then they independently decide.
A couple things, Your Honor, here, and it may involve a little bit of legislative history again, which I think may respond to Your Honor's concerns. And the first thing, I do want to kind of correct the idea or the notion that grand juries are somehow acting independently from prosecutors. They're not. The grand jury is not a self-convening body, and in fact, it's the same exact prosecutor in this case who knew full well that there were no probable cause findings. And so the prosecutor's office is convening this grand jury for a return of an indictment. And so I think this is not so much a question about what a grand jury can and cannot do, but more properly, what a prosecutor's office can and cannot use a grand jury for. Perhaps more to Your Honor's question, though, I think the view that the grand jury has the power to indict, the plenary power to indict as it sees fit, comes directly from this court's decision in Klingenberger and then adopted in Adams, which the legislature expressly overturned. Specifically, the legislature said the following, quote, "The General Assembly hereby declares that its purpose in enacting current divisions A and B of the transfer statute is to overrule the holding in State versus Adams regarding the effect of binding a child over for trial as an adult." And so that view that the grand jury does possess this plenary power was rejected by the General Assembly. And the legislative history is somewhat convoluted here, and I don't know that I quite hit the nail on the head in the briefing, and so I wanted to add a little bit.
How do you derive a finality and a lack of a probable cause finding?
Well, Your Honor, again,
a complete adjudication or a complete resolution of a charge against an individual charged as if it's beyond a reasonable doubt. Explain that to me. Where do you get that?
Well, we're not saying that it's a dismissal with prejudice. Again, this goes back to this court's decisions in AJS and MP, where this court said, again, MP was a discretionary transfer context, and this court said that a finding of no probable cause is the functional equivalent of a dismissal. So this is breaking no new ground. This flows directly from this court's central reasoning in MP. And in addition, Your Honors, this is an inflection point. This is important. On a more practical level, the juvenile court's final transfer entry dated October 22, 2018 shows quite literally that the unsupported charges dropped out of this case with the finding of no probable cause. That entry lists in order each of the charges for which probable cause was established, and it deliberately omits each of those charges for which probable cause was not established. And so,
counsel, there was no finality when that happened because the state had an opportunity to appeal that, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Or represent new evidence that wasn't presented at the initial hearing to support that charge.
Correct, Your Honor, yes. And on that note,
a follow-up to Justice Donnelly's question. Doesn't your argument assume that the exact same evidence was presented to the juvenile court as was presented to the grand jury?
Well, as best as we can glean from this record, it was the exact same evidence.
How do you know that?
The reason I say that, I don't know for certain what
it's
was presented.
It's not in the record, is it?
Well, it's in the state's recitation of the facts at the plea and sentencing hearing, and that recitation of the facts mirrors exactly the evidence that was presented at the juvenile court probable cause hearing. And so, of course, no, we do not know exactly what was presented to the grand jury. That's a secretive, you know.
Right, so we don't know.
Correct. We don't, but I think we should take the record as it is, and insofar as the record shows us what that evidence was, the state specifically relied on the same set of facts and evidence that it presented at the juvenile court hearing, and I think that's the best we can do on the record.
But your theory assumes that the exact same evidence was presented because if there was different evidence presented to the grand jury,
I think
this wouldn't be a parallel argument.
Well, if different evidence was presented, I think that would have been recited in the state's recitation of the facts and evidence at the plea and sentencing hearing, and it wasn't. And so the fact that it wasn't, I think, is very telling. If I may.
Telling of what?
Telling of what was presented and what was not presented to the grand jury. I think, again, if the state had additional evidence, and to Your Honor's question, of
course. I didn't say additional, I said different.
If it had different evidence, I think in the state's own recitation of the facts, then that recitation of the facts would have shown that their facts and evidence was different than what they relied on in juvenile court. It was not. It was exactly what was presented in the juvenile court. I do see that my time running.
It is up, you can sit down.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Oshaki.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, I will be sharing the last 5 minutes of my argument time with the amicus, the Ohio Attorney General's office. The issue before this court is when a juvenile court finds probable cause to transfer some but not all counts of a multi-count complaint, what happens to the non-probable cause counts? The General Assembly intended for those counts to be transferred to the adult court. The authority is Revised Code 2151.23H and 2152.12.
Counsel, let me ask you this, the same question that Justice Fischer asked your opponent. Is there anything different about this case than the court is deciding in State v. Smith? Anything at all?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. I believe that if State v. Smith finds that probable cause or that a non-probable cause count is transferred to the adult court, then the same thing should happen in this case.
Thank you.
Could you please address the alleged error when the lower court decided that
there was probable cause on lesser offenses, that is complicity, for the greater predicate ones?
Sure, Your Honor. Probable cause is it's a flexible standard.
But could the court really, was the court empowered to find complicity when it wasn't really charged?
Your Honor, I don't think that the juvenile court, could they find, I think the juvenile court found that he was, that that Mr. Burns did participate in these acts.
But if you think about, I mean, this child is going to be transferred to adult court, and if there's a question of complicity in adult court in an indictment, it's in the indictment. So how could the court, without there being some kind of a charge in the complaint in juvenile court, just sua sponte find complicity and then give it the legs to move it to adult court? I mean, is there any other situation where you've seen that's been acceptable?
Your Honor, I think that Mr. Burns here, as far as the counts where he was found complicit, they're very limited. And in fact, the complicity counts for Mr. Wells, the cameraman for the television truck. Mr. Wells was robbed at gunpoint at the same time that the reporter was robbed. Mr. Burns robbed the reporter. His partner robbed the cameraman. The exact same time, the reporter said she saw both of them come up around the back of the truck. So to believe
that. I'm not really, I don't mean to interrupt you, but your time is valuable and so is ours. I don't think the facts matter. I think what matters is does the law allow the juvenile court judge to sua sponte find complicity and then equate that into, morph that into probable cause to send that on to adult court? I mean, that's an issue of law I think we all need to figure out if there's any precedent for.
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. But as I was trying to state, I don't think that as far as the complicity, I mean, Mr. Burns, the two incidents where the juvenile court found complicity. One of them was the camera truck, where they both were there at the same time. The other one was the cable repairman, who testified that he was robbed by two individuals. Only one of them had a gun, but both individuals robbed him. And Mr. Burns was found within the hour with the victim's credit card, ATM card, using it at a convenience store, walking out and using it again. So I don't think it's really the juvenile court said complicity, but I don't really think it was a complicity finding. I mean, I think he was an active participant in both of those.
Did the state
offenses.
Ask that the juvenile judge find complicity, probable cause for complicity?
In its argument, they did argue. In the state's closing argument, they did argue complicity. It was
in
not
juvenile court.
Yes, Your Honor. It was not in the complaint, but they did argue.
It's not in the complaint, but somehow they morphed what was in the complaint to complicity.
That would be correct, Your Honor.
Does that happen very often in juvenile court?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know.
So the okay, never mind.
Back to the what the General Assembly's intent as far as the non-probable cause counts. 2151.23H says that upon transfer to the adult court has jurisdiction to hear and determine the case in the same manner as if it had commenced there. Since Mr. Burns was charged with felonies, he had a constitutional right to presentment and indictment by the grand jury. And the grand jury is the ultimate charging body. It has discretion to determine which felonies to charge based on the evidence presented before it.
Counsel, do you believe the language in that statute, the case, is what is dispositive of that? That even the counts that did not result in a probable cause finding transfer along with that? Is it because it says the case?
I believe that the case is part of it, Your Honor. In 2151.23, the fact that the case commences as if it had been first brought in the general division, I think 2151 or 2152.12i says that the juvenile court, the transfer abates the jurisdiction of the juvenile court over the delinquent acts that are alleged in the complaint.
So in a hypothetical case in juvenile court where you had three counts, let's say a felonious assault, robbery, and a drug possession, all stemming from the same set of facts, under your interpretation of the statute, you could choose just to present probable cause on the drug charge and then opt not to present any evidence on the other two, and those three counts go over and you have to go through the grand jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
The alternatives with which what the appellant is suggesting don't work. The counts, I mean, he claims that these counts were dismissed by the finding of no probable cause. That's not the fact here. The juvenile court did not dismiss the counts that it found no probable cause. And in fact, the juvenile court at the probable cause hearing, it's a preliminary hearing. It's non-adjudicatory. And this court has instructed the juvenile court that its duty or its role is to only determine whether or not there's probable cause. It's not to determine whether or not the child is delinquent. So the counts were not dismissed here. What happens to those counts? Do they stay in the juvenile court? They can't, because 2151.23 says that once it's transferred, the adult court takes jurisdiction over the case.
So, in practice, when no probable cause is the pronouncement of the juvenile court, but there is a probable cause finding on one or more of a multi-count, charge, the state doesn't have to worry about the probable cause determination because they know they only have to prove probable cause on one allegation of criminal activity, and then the whole batch gets turned over to, if an amenability hearing determines that the child is not amenable to juvenile proceedings, correct?
That's not correct, Your Honor. The prosecution still has to present probable cause to the grand jury and have finding.
I'm not at the grand jury yet. I'm talking about what happens in juvenile court. In essence, the state can do 5-6 charges, mm-hmm. only worry about quality presentation of evidence in one charge so that the trial court will find probable cause, then move on to the amenability hearing. And if it was, a 5-count charge case, it all goes over to the grand jury instead of the prosecutor appealing the lack of a finding of probable cause.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the reason is, if you look at this court's decisions concerning the state's right to appeal, they determine on whether or not it is the functional equivalent of a dismissal of a criminal complaint.
All right, well, let me ask you something, how this affects the amenability hearing. Because if the judge finds probable cause for one crime, mm-hmm. and there's an allegation of 5 crimes, doesn't the nature of the crime that the child at probable cause is found for affect the judge's determination of amenability? Does that not factor in the crime?
Sure it would, Your Honor. And I think from a practical standpoint, it would be better for the prosecution to establish probable cause on all 5 of those counts.
Well, but under my scenario, they didn't. They only went with one. They could have gone with one with the lowest, level of felony. Mm-hmm. They They provide probable cause for that. The judge finds probable cause. There's an F-4, whatever. The rest are, you know, maybe threes, twos, whatever. So then it's the judge's determination of amenability, and the judge has to take into consideration what crimes the child has been involved with, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the judge can presume, even though probable cause when it's not established, that those four other crimes are attributable to that child.
If the grand jury finds probable cause.
I'm not talking about the grand jury.
I understand that, Your Honor, but if there is no evidence presented on those counts to the juvenile court judge, what would make the juvenile court judge believe that there is facts behind those counts?
Pardon me?
If there's no probable cause, no evidence of probable cause is introduced on those other four counts, the juvenile court judge, why would they believe that that the state was holding something back? I mean, it makes sense if you want to.
I'm not saying the juvenile court judge thinks the state is holding back. I'm saying what's before the judge to make an amenability hearing? You've only proven probable cause, or you've only introduced and established probable cause for one crime, but you're saying that the judge will then decide amenability and would have to take in all of the four that weren't in order to determine that the child was not amenable to juvenile proceedings on an F-4, F-5.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not, I guess.
The scenario that you seem to be advocating is that if a prosecutor doesn't have a great bevy of evidence on some of the charges, that if they can just get the judge to find probable cause on one out of those five charges, that then everything gets to go to the common pleas court, and then the prosecutor can essentially force a plea on things that they don't have enough evidence for. That's kind of what you're telling the Chief Justice here.
Well, Your Honor, in a situation where there's mandatory and discretionary bind over counts, if probable cause is found only on the mandatory count, the entire case is transferred over. So that's a similar situation.
I guess when you say the entire case, the case is being transferred over. But, of course, and this is probably circular, your argument is the case is everything that can. By that scenario, you can put a whole, bucket load of things in charges there that if the juvenile court doesn't find probable cause, then you get another bite at the apple for the common pleas court to find probable cause. How does that make sense?
Your Honor, that's the way the legislature has written 2151.23H.
But that's really how you're interpreting the word the case, though, correct?
The word the case and the word that the fact that the court, the transferee court, the adult court, has jurisdiction to hear and determine the case in the same manner as if it had commenced, in the same manner is by presentment to the grand jury.
But that's your interpretation of in the same manner, though. Because when you say in the same manner, it's the way to adjudicate the charges the way a juvenile court would have if the case stayed in the juvenile court manner. You're saying in the same manner meaning the exact same thing has to fall over. The exact same charges have to come over. And logistically, that doesn't seem to make sense. If there's no probable cause finding on some of the charges, which you agree is appealable, correct?
I would agree if there is a no probable cause finding on all of the charges, then it's appealable. Then it is the functional equivalent of a dismissal of a criminal complaint.
Okay, and if there's no probable cause on some of the findings, which is not immediately appealable, but it's a dismissal without prejudice.
No, Your Honor, the charges were not dismissed. The juvenile court did not dismiss these charges. And in fact, in one of the cases that appellant cited, DMS, The juvenile court found no probable cause in a discretionary bindover, and then the opinion says the next thing it did is it set the matter for a pretrial conference. So the case was still going forward on the charges where there was no probable cause.
In the juvenile court?
Yes, Your Honor, because it's not the probable cause hearing is not a adjudicatory hearing.
But is there a distinction without a difference in that case because it stayed in the juvenile court?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
As opposed to being bound over?
The reason that case was appealable is because the juvenile court did not find probable cause on any of the counts. So that was the functional equivalent of a dismissal. Now, in the case we have before us here, where some of the counts are transferred, that it's not the functional equivalent. The case has been, there is a criminal complaint filed against Mr. Burns. So that's the distinction.
Okay. So you're saying you only appeal if everything is a finding of no probable cause? If it's a hybrid situation, you don't appeal?
If the case is not transferred, that's when we appeal, Your Honor. If the case is not transferred on a probable cause determination, we don't have a right to appeal if it's an amenability issue. But if there's a finding of no probable cause on all the counts, that's when the state has the right to appeal.
Because as you see it, if there is a finding of let's not deal with mandatory, but let's say if the juvenile judge finds probable cause on one or more offenses and not the rest, then you just consider that you get to deal with it all in common police court. That's been your view. That's been the practice, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, based on the statutes. If there are no further questions, I would just yield whatever time I have left to my amicus. Thank you.
Okay, you have no time left, but Mr. Flowers, you may take 2 minutes. Mr. Flowers, does this, our interpretation here and our reading of the statute all hinge on what the definition of a case is in juvenile court?
I think that's part of it. If I could, I'd like to answer a question you asked Mr. Ashaki, and then I can come back for three reasons to affirm, and that will be my first. So my answer to you is that you asked about amenability. Should they consider these other charges? No, a juvenile court should not consider it amenability charges for which there was no probable cause finding. They should make the probable cause finding first. That brings me back to what I'd like to get into, which are three reasons to affirm. The first responds to what you just asked me and to a question Justice Stewart asked to my colleague, which is what does case means? Well, all the parties here agree that case means, at the very least, all the charges pending against the defendant. You can see that on page 5 of their reply. So all the charges pending. Burns' theory is that the charges are somehow dismissed from the case. They cease to be part of the case. But we know that's wrong for two reasons. The first is that in Iacono and other cases, this court has said that the probable cause inquiry is not a merits determination. If it leads to dismissal, it most certainly is. The second reason is that legislatures don't confer immense authority by mere implication. To borrow a phrase from the U.S. Supreme Court, they don't hide elephants in mouse holes. So if the General Assembly had wanted to empower a juvenile court to dismiss charges, it would have said so expressly. Burns's reading contradicts this because he takes a statute that's just about the bindover process and a provision in that statute that simply requires a probable cause finding during that process as sub silentio in empowering juvenile courts to throw charges out. That's a big elephant to read into a little mouse hole. Second reason to affirm, and this goes to the Adams point. Sorry, I'm speaking quickly. I know we're short on time. Goes to the Adams point, is that even if the charges are dismissed, the adult court can still adjudicate those charges. Here's how we know that. Remember, as we've been discussing, the case goes to a grand jury, and the grand jury will have to return an indictment. If it does, section 2151.23H of the revised code says that the adult court has jurisdiction not only over, quote, the offense that was the basis of the transfer of the case, that's what we're talking about here, but also, quote, another offense that is different from the offense charged. So that shows us that the probable cause determination does not limit the adult court's jurisdiction. So let me return to Adams now. Adams, in paragraph 2 of the syllabus, says that the grand jury can indict for charges other than those bound over. He's correct that the General Assembly abrogated part of Adams, but not that part. If you look at the statute that he's citing, the part they abrogated was another part of Adams, which said that once a juvenile is bound over once, all subsequent felonies he commits later in life will also be bound over. He's correct that that part was abrogated by statute. He's wrong, paragraph 2 of the syllabus was. My final reason to affirm goes to judicial administrability. We hear a lot of talk about appeals and that, you know, following a no probable cause finding, we could either challenge that or drop the charge and recharge. It's not going to be quite that simple. Here's the problem with dividing the case, as he suggests. If you do that, you get two parallel tracks. You get the adult court case and you get the juvenile court case. A, that's incredibly inefficient because you have the same parties litigating perhaps identical, definitely similar issues in two different forums that may come to inconsistent conclusions. But in addition to that, it creates very serious double jeopardy problems. Jeopardy will attach in one of those proceedings first. Once it does, the state will be forever barred from charging the juvenile, including a potentially very dangerous juvenile, of charges that were pending in the other forum, if for lesser included charges pending in that forum. So for example, if you go to adult court, jeopardy attaches, they fail to prove first degree murder. If the, for some reason, manslaughter wasn't bound over, they will never again be able to charge the individual with that crime.
But as the state, either you have the evidence or you don't. Why would you hold it back in the juvenile proceeding?
Well, you might not hold it back, but the juvenile court may make a mistake. Under his theory, if one juvenile court makes a mistake, that could forever bar the state from bringing those charges, because if the jeopardy attaches in the adult court first and it's a lesser included charge, then we're out of luck. It's hard to believe the General Assembly would create a system that allows for those inefficiencies, creates those possible double jeopardy problems, so we would ask the court to not strain to read it that way. Case means, at the very least, all the charges pending against the defendant, these charges are still pending, and so they're bound over with the rest of the case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Haggart. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very, very quickly, Your Honors. The amenability statute does specifically include severity of the offense as a factor for the juvenile court to consider at the amenability stage. Two, I want to emphasize that the charges for which no probable cause was found never even make it into the transfer entry, the document purporting to transfer subject matter jurisdiction from one court to the other. So my friends on the other side say that these charges either hang in limbo or continue unabated to adjudication. That is not true, and we know that as a procedural fact from the juvenile court's own transfer entry. Thirdly, Your Honors, the state does regularly appeal from no probable cause findings in discretionary only cases. Those were the list of additional authorities that we submitted to the court. And finally, Your Honors, given the natural consequences of failing to prove allegations, even under this, what the state regards as a very low, minimal threshold, and given the state's existing remedies, we do not need to create an end around a jurisdictional statute and reward the state with yet another option at the statute's expense. The legislature has spoken, the legislature has set forth this process, and we do not need to create loopholes around it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.